Okay, well, we'll get going here, and everybody who's still waiting in line at the restroom is in bad shape. We're gonna break for lunch at 12:15. There is this beautiful restaurant here. My guess is they're gonna be a little slow if we all hit them at once. There are a lot of options on this street, so if you take a right out here, there's a cute little place called Capitol Grill, which was the original Colorado State Capitol. On down, there's a cute little hotel called Table Mountain Inn. Has a real nice restaurant in it. Across the street is a all-you-can-eat pizza buffet called Woody's, which will be fast in and out, and it's pretty good if you're into that. And there's a bunch of other stuff up and down the strip. There's Jimmy John's sandwich shop across the street. My 11-year-old daughter's favorite restaurant in town is Table Mountain Inn, and my 4-year-old son's favorite is Woody's. So if that gives you any benchmarks, but. There is a lot of stuff. If you take a right, there's essentially nothing if you go left. Just right out from the hotel here, within 2 blocks, there's 5 or 6 options. And this little restaurant here is beautiful too. I would guess if we go hit them at once, we'll get started again at 5. The other thing again is we're going to break from here around 6:30. We're going to go up to my house and do a meet and greet and have a taco and burrito bar up there. From about 7:30 to 9:15 or something like that. And who does not have a rental car, by the way? Okay, not many. So if you don't have a car, you'll want to jump in with somebody. We've got directions for you. It's about 15-20 minutes from here. So it's not bad. If you don't have a car, you'll need to get directions. Or if you don't have a car, you'll need to ride with somebody. If you do have a car, we've got directions for you. Okay, so questions from anything we've talked about so far? We're actually hitting the rare occurrence that I'm ahead of schedule. So between Jeff Smith and myself, you'll be surprised how rarely that happens. Yes, sir?
So you mentioned a little bit about the student value.
Yes.
And then, so if there are good things to do to increase the average student value.
Well, it's really straightforward. It's really straightforward. And there's something else I meant to mention and then got distracted, too. Here's the irony of what most people think. Most people think that if I go from 140 a month to 190 a month, that fewer people are going to enroll. They think it's an inverse correlation. And in reality, that's almost never true. Okay? What my experience was going back to the late 80s was I would raise the price, my enrollment would go up. I'd raise the price, my enrollment would go up. Okay? And see, we're not in a business where you fight for market share, okay? And there are businesses where you do fight for market share. Right now in the United States, everybody possible that could and should own a cell phone. There's no such thing other than replacing the people who die with the ones who now turn 4 or 6, right? I mean, because, my 10-year-old has a cell phone. Other than that, the market is saturated. Now, that's not true of China and India and stuff, but in the U.S. it's saturated. If you look at Coors Refinery, which is right over here, which is now Molson Coors, so they merged with a Canadian company. What? Yeah, okay. And so if you look at Coors and Budweiser, the two biggest in the United States, is they have not only a saturated market, they have a declining market. If you look at Coke and Pepsi, they have not only a saturated market, but a declining market, right? So Budweiser and Coors are fighting each other for market share. Pepsi and Coke are fighting each other for market share. Pepsi and Coke, the way they've solved it, is they now have about 1,000 other things that they do. Everything from Red Bull to Powerade to Smart Water are almost all under the umbrella of Coke or Pepsi. But in our case, we're never fighting for market share. And so rule number one is what your competition does, unless you suck at marketing, doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter what the guy across the street, down the street, around the block is charging, because our situation should be it's never more than 3 or 5% of the prospective students, even though they're there, or check them out. Then, in our market, again, the martial arts, the quality of the guy down the street is almost always such that if they come to you and go to him, And I say if they come to you, because if you're smart enough to have gotten a plane ticket and sit in the room, you're probably pretty damn good at what you do on the floor. Okay? I just make that assumption. It's not always true, but it's usually true. Okay? If that's the case, they can go to the school down the street and come to you. The way they make a decision is this. They want the highest possible quality instruction as long as they can figure out how to put it in the budget. They don't want the cheapest. They don't want the best value. They want the best. That's the way a person's mind works when they're looking for a school. Does that make sense? And so if you anchor that in, you realize that, one, it doesn't matter what the guy down the street is charging because you're doing your marketing right, they don't even know he's there. Two is the small number who are aggressive enough to go look down the street. If you can't blow away all of your competition from the standpoint of the quality of your instruction, quality of your staff, the quality of your floor, the quality of your support and service, you got to fix that. Because frankly, you should be so head and shoulders above everybody that it doesn't matter. Because if they do check out anybody, they're going to say to themselves, I want the best. Then when you tell them the price, they're going to decide if they can afford it or not. Does everybody see how that's a different decision-making process? See, in our case, and that's what Greg does for us, we buy a lot of printing. Printing is a different thing. It's more commoditized. What I want is I want a printer who's on top of it, who's sharp, who's going to get it done and not screw it up, and who's going to deliver on time. And once I have those things, which is the hardest part, by the way, what I want is the cheapest comparable, right? But if you have a tax problem, you're going to go hire a tax attorney. Do you want the cheapest tax attorney? You want the best one. If you have a litigation problem, you want the best lawyer. If you have a medical problem, if you just had an aneurysm, which doc do you want?
Cheapest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the coming Medicare problem, right? Is all the good ones are opting out of the system and aren't going to take it. So the problem that they're arguing with right now about Medicare is the problem with government reimbursement is the good ones are opting out of the system altogether. So then you end up with lower and lower quality options. And it's the what you want is you want the best quality doc, right? You want the best quality CPA, you want the best quality attorney within the budget. So you might not get on a plane, go to Manhattan, hire the $900 an hour guy. But you want the best that you can afford. So going back to your question, Eric, specifically, is the components of the value. First, most important is retention. So the longer you keep a student, just by definition, even if you're only charging them month to month for life, the longer they're going to pay you, right? The next thing is the structure of the contract. Because if they're going to pay you for 36 months of lessons, but they pay you in 12 months, you've collected more money more quickly. And some portion of them are going to pay you for lessons that they're not around for. And frankly, some portion of them are going to pay you for lessons that they're now going to take because when they got laid off, have a transition, have a financial crunch, they don't choose to drop out of martial arts lessons because it's not a financial issue at this point. They've already paid for it. Does that make sense? The second element is even accelerating more for somebody who prepays for 3 years or 4 years rather than paying it out monthly. The same logic applies, right? Then the next thing is the structure. See, it's different if somebody pays me $200 down, $200 a month for 12 months versus they pay me $600 down, $200 a month for 12 months. The difference is, one, the bigger down payment encourages more commitment. Two is it accelerates your cash flow. And so you have a retention component. They're more likely to stay because they're more committed. It's why the big fancy health clubs will do, or golf courses. Golf courses will be an $80,000 initiation fee. The big fancy health clubs, it's a $1,000 enrollment fee, and then it's a in relative terms, maybe $200 a month fee. But why do you not stop paying the $200 a month fee? You don't want to pay the $1,000 again to join again when you come back, right? So that's a component. Ultimately, the component that we mostly miss is just pushing up the rates overall, right? And I can tell you the difference between charging 99 a month, 149 a month, 199 a month, 249 a month, it is not much of a drop-off in the ratios. As long as you're fishing from the right pond, bringing the right prospects in the door, and as long as you have reasonably decent demographics. And so, you know, obviously in your case, you've got fabulous demographics, right? In Crystal's case, and by the way, Eric, stand up. Crystal, stand up. Carol, stand up. Who else should I pick on for a second? Oh, this is good enough. These three I hold the record because I've told them each about 9 times in the last 90 days that they're leaving $1 million a year on the table. Is that a fair assessment?
It's probably more.
To the point that they're nauseated by hearing it, right? But in his case, imagine I have 600 active people and I just add $100 on average to the value per person. Well, that's $60,000 a month in revenue, $720,000. How much extra expenses do I have? Zero. And I would argue maybe not zero because I'm going to send them cookies more often and flowers more often, and I'm going to be nicer to them, right? So if I added $100 a year and gained $1,200, I've added $1,100 a year in value per student times 600, so I'm only at $700,000 additional. The biggest problem that big schools have is nobody's taught them how to keep the money. So you end up with grossing 60, netting 15. It should be grossing 100, keeping 60. See, that's the deal. We kind of forget the mission wasn't to build a big, high-volume business. The mission was to get wealthy, right? And by the way, the more money you're keeping, the more stable you are. The more money you're keeping, the more likely you are to be there 10, 20, 30 years from now, right? The more money you're keeping off the table and putting into investments, the less likely any tragedy is going to affect the school. Does that make sense? There's a few more I was going to pick on, but you guys are good enough, right? So back to Eric's question is, how do you improve your student value? Well, one of the things is, in your market, is you've got to do what you've already done, is you've got to have regular progress updates, a lot of hand-holding, a high level of rapport with the students. You've got to have a very traditional martial arts environment for them, not treat it like a fitness center, right? The next thing you have to do is you have to move them from thinking of this as a physical thing to feeling like it's a complete, holistic, mental and emotional and physical development, right? And the transition on that for the adult market, frankly, is easier than the kids' market ever was. Okay, with the soccer moms coming in 20 years ago, we didn't have all the media about how it's great for kids and stuff back then, right? Is we had to be convincing her, well, no, this isn't like your quarterly alternative to soccer. This isn't like baseball. This is something more. It's something that's going to develop confidence and discipline and focus, right? In the adult market, I mean, how many references do you have? You know, I mean, hell, there's TV shows now on Bud S training and SEAL training. I mean, there's books that you can take. And so if the guys are coming in looking at it like warriors, I mean, hell, Krav is the best example. There are so many examples. I mean, the cannon fodder guys at the lowest end who are barely high school graduates in the military may not have all of the mental skill sets, but that's what basic training is designed for anyway, right? But the ones that are coming out of West Point, the ones who are graduating from Delta training or the SEALs, they're the highest level, not necessarily just physical skill sets, because they're not weeding for skill, physical skills so much as they're judging character, judging confidence, judging fortitude, judging self-discipline. So it's easier in that market, in my estimation, to translate that to an adult 45-year-old attorney or an MD. The second thing is the excuse that people use is, yeah, but I've got a 24-year-old black belt teaching him, and I don't want him talking down to an MD. The MD is going to be pissed off if the kid is talking to him about that. That's not what happens. What happens is the more somebody values that level of development, the more impressed they are with the fact that you're doing it. And frankly, the more impressed they are with Caitlin over there, who's 15, has more of that than any of their staff who are average college graduates and 32. I've had that conversation a bunch of times. I had a guy who had a law firm with 132 employees take me out to lunch a couple times and pick my brain on how do we create such high level of competence and podium skills and everything else on our staff, because he couldn't get his attorneys, most of whom were Ivy League graduates, back that way. Right? See, so we've got to get over the self-esteem component and recognize that as you move higher in the demographic ladder, they appreciate it more and more and more. Right? The second thing is the adult market, you can't pull them in the door very easily that way. Right? Tony Robbins gets away with it. Very few others succeed doing that. But you can pull them under the door with different bait and then transition them to be thinking in terms of that's what it's all about. And as you can, as you transition them, that's when it goes from a program worth $199 a month to a program worth $499 a month. Does that make sense? And see, where you're still struggling is you came up under high school wrestling programs and stuff, and it was all the you know, the coach was doing some mental, but it was mostly physical. Is that a fair assessment? And your academic background is all in the mental stuff, but you haven't transitioned to thinking in terms of the students are appreciating the value of that. And it's an educational process for them to appreciate it, but the students you have will appreciate it more than anybody else, and as you move the income demographics and the career demographics even higher, they'll appreciate it more. Does that make sense? And so, but ultimately the value is, it's an accelerating the tuition, which has more and more of an impact if you have a higher and higher dropout rate. You know, our friend Buzz Durkin, he doesn't need to do any of that stuff. Once they enroll, they're there for the rest of their life, right? So if he got them to pay and pull for 5 years, it wouldn't do him any good. Most of us aren't that good, right? So the accelerated tuition component is mostly because what the marketers call breakage. You're getting paid for things that either they don't take, or if they hadn't paid in full, they wouldn't have, because other things would have gotten in the way and they would have dropped out. Does that make sense? But the higher the down payment, the better. The higher the monthly tuition, the better. To a great extent, the more you can accelerate that tuition, the better. The way I ended up in the higher price programs is we used to do it as accelerated tuition. You're getting a six-year program, but you're paying for it in 3 years. So it's $200 a month, but you're going to pay $400 a month, and then it's 3 years free. And then what I figured out is, well, they're willing to pay $400 a month. Why don't we just have it be over the full term? Didn't make any difference. Didn't make any difference. One of the first coaching clients I worked with, we had the same impact. Miko Pellet in Coronado, California, he was doing a renewal to Black Belt, but he was charging them, I think it's $300 a month for 12 months for a 3-year program. So I just got him to charge $300 a month for a 3-year program for all 3 years, and it tripled the average value of every contract. And ultimately multiplied, not by triple, but, you know, doubled, more than doubled, the average value per student over the term. Does that make sense? But, and Master Smith.
A good example of that, Master Oliver, is back in 67, when I, before Hackney were born, I had a college program that I was running in Texas, and I was a student at the time, but the way the college program worked, as soon as the highest ranking belt left, whoever was the highest ranking took the club over and was in charge of charging the belt they wanted and teach whatever schedule they wanted. Well, when it was my turn to take over, and it was over the summer, I set up a game plan that I wanted to triple the enrollment. But I was also going to triple the prime. So a couple of the guys that were close to my level at that time that were probably next to mine were worried that we were going to lose the people we had, and I said, no, just wait. Now, we did do marketing. We did flyers. We did demonstrations at the university, so we prepped it. They came in. I charged them for what we had been. The only ones that complained were the ones that were there already, and a few of those did leave, but we picked up 3 times as many new students. And, of course, my peers that were there that were helping me were just floored. They couldn't believe it. You know, they said, no, that would never work. So that concept has been around, and Master Oliver just took it to another level. And one of the reasons, and it's easier, I've found to, you know, I talk with a lot of the school owners, and one of the hardest problems is to get them to believe in the concept. And here's what happens. The first time you tell them, like Master Oliver says, you're going to charge them $400 a month. What's the first thing you're going to say or they're going to say?
Nobody's going to pay that. I'm going to lose all my students. Well, two things have to happen. One is it's the perception of value, and that perception of value has to start with you. What are you doing differently that's going to add that value? Is your program really worth that? If it's not, then you can't. But people don't care. When we have students who go to private schools, and I don't know how the private schools are in your area, but 15 to 20,000 a year, private schools, some even more. And guess what? Waiting list at most of them. Because
not in New York. They're it's $85 a month to park your bicycle.
And they have to qualify to get in. So they're like, so what do we do for our higher programs? We make them qualify to get in. We don't let anybody in our leadership training. You have to jump through a few hoops and fill out a few, and they have a whole test and a thing that they go through to see if they're qualified. Well, now that we've qualified, why would somebody pay, they were paying $200, why are they now going to pay $400? Instead of paying it for 1 year, $200, now they're going to pay 6 years, $400. Well, it's because the perception of the value, it's what you're actually delivering. Now, parents pay $15,000 to $20,000, but think about this. It's not the $15,000 or $20,000 that they're paying. It's that they've already paid for their education for their children. They can go to public school free because it's already been taken out of their tax dollars. Now, that would be the equivalent of the guy down the street charges his program. How much is it? Free. Yours is $400. Which are they going to go to?
The highest quality program that they can afford.
They might not come in at the four, you know, we don't even expect them to come in at the 400 rate yet. Mass Dollar's moving in that direction already. We've already moved it up to 247, and it'll climb. And the 400 is going up to 497. But, and how do you know when you've reached the high point? When you're no longer full. Yeah. Because, you know, everybody's got 2,000 to 3,000 square foot. Some schools have 4 or 5, which are a little overkill.
10 or 12.
Too much. Yeah. But you tend to reach capacity, and whether it's what you're charging, since you're kind of at that 300 range, most schools are, you know, are shooting for a 3. Some have 400 or 500 and squeeze them in a little more because they have good retention. But think in terms, the next time you're trying to sell one of those upgrade programs, that these parents are already programmed to do that, because why would they pay 15 or 20? They both get a high school degree. They both get the same piece of paper. But isn't it the perception of value that they get at the private school? Well, I'll tell you, my kids went to private school for 6 years. They went to public school for 6 years. There's no difference, except for the child's concept. You get a child who's motivated, and you've got them pointed in the right direction, they can get as much out of a private school as a kid who goes to, a public school, as a kid who goes to private school who doesn't amount to anything because he's not motivated.
Let's shift gears. Let's get shift gears so in 15 minutes we break for lunch. There was an interesting study done recently, by the way. Have you seen all the studies about the charter schools and the much better effect the kids have with charter schools? Have you guys seen some of those studies when you look at education? There was another study done that tracked, I think it's in New York, but there's, you know, several of the charter schools where it's like 10 kids competing to get into one slot. And what they did is a long-term study of all the kids who were competing for the slot, not just the ones that got in. Do you know what they found? Is the correlation was not in the kids who got into the school. It was in the kids whose parents were engaged enough to want them in the school. All of the kids who were trying to get into the charter magnet schools did far better than the kids in the rest of the program, because they were the ones that had parents engaged, fighting for a better opportunity for them. I thought it was an interesting study, because usually they just study the ones who end up in the school and the ones who aren't in the school, and this was studying the ones who were trying but didn't get in as well. So it's an interesting study.
Those success stories really make a difference in your school. One of my black belt juniors who was with me since he was 5 years old, just graduated from Annapolis in June this year, and finished number one in his class. Well, not only did he have a scholarship anyway there, he obviously proved it worthy. He got a scholarship for his graduate degree for his master's at Oxford.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of value do you think his parents put on our program? Not only did he get an education, he got a free education at one of the best academic schools in the country, who also teach discipline. So he's at Annapolis, and now he gets Master Oliver has him from his schools with people at Harvard and different situations like that. And you guys, if you teach what we're talking about, and that's the character development, that's getting the students here. The physical is important, and our kids can be just as good physically, but when you emphasize the other, they take it to a whole new level and a whole new value on the program.
Good. Thank you. Eric, does that answer your question? I mean, we can spend a lot more time on what this should look like and what the structure is, but frankly, it's much less complicated. What so many end up doing is building this big, thing in their mind about how complicated it has to be and how much stuff you have to be. Really, all you have to have is the language to be able to sell it, and then you have to have a little bit of support tools so that they're really getting the deliverable. But if you're dripping a little bit of high-level material on them, 5 or 10 minutes, every time they come into the school over the 3, 4, 5 years, the cumulative effect is incredible, right?
And the major importance of that deep value, why you have to know that, if your retention is going down, your student value is going down. If your retention is going up, your student value will be going up.
But
so that's why it's so critical to increase that student value.
Here are the two things we've proven over the years, by the way. Number one, in most cases, with a higher initial tuition rate, the conversion rate from intro to enrollment is higher. And number two, with a higher tuition rate, the retention rate is better. So the more they're paying, the longer they stay. In most cases, the more they're paying, the better the conversion rate. As you trend towards cheaper and cheaper students, you guys may have seen the thing about the schools in Walmart. Well, the problem is it's a low price point and it's a crappy retention rate. So you're flushing them in and out all the time. You're creating bad quality students at a low price point, and you just have to keep flooding more people in. And by the way, if you just keep flooding more people in who flush out, how many of them are accomplishing any lifelong benefits? See, I mean, we can be promising them all these great things we're going to do for them, but frankly, if we don't keep them for 3 or 4 years, we don't ever get there, right? So it's so important to be setting every student up for being there and being a black belt, right? And if black belt is 9 years, then you've got to be setting them up to be thinking in terms of the intermediate step of 3 to 4 years, the next step that's 6 or 7, the next step that's 9, to feed them through that process, right? So it's so important to be thinking that way. Again, it's just like college. It's easy for them to understand a 4-year degree, a master's degree, a PhD, and that's 4 years, another 2 years, another 3 years. It's easy for them to understand that concept. So if you use academic terminology, it translates smoothly, right? But the one thing I want to do in about 11 minutes here, one of the comments that Carol made, I'm going to hopefully don't butcher your quote, but I was just out of Washington, D.C. and did about a day and a half at their school, really trying to, flesh out what some of the things that are missing. And they're running, what, a $750,000 school right now that I think should be a $2 million a year school. And one of the comments that Carol made is that what was unusual about me was that everywhere I looked, I saw opportunities. Is that a fair?
Yes.
And it's so important to condition yourself for that. And I visited 2 or 3 pretty high-level schools recently, and what I have noticed is even schools doing a pretty good job aren't aware of their environment, and they're not aware of opportunities. And so they're not walking down the street, driving through the neighborhood, looking for opportunities that are there. They're just driving to the school every day, the same route they always did. One of the, I don't know how I picked it up, but one of the things I did for years with 6 locations is every time I drove to a location, I took a different route. And I went by the rec centers, and went by the big churches, and went by the, you know, went by the parks and I looked at the banners and I looked at the different things going on. I always stopped in all the rec centers and looked at the flyers and stuff, and stopped in the big churches and looked at all the stuff, and walked in the grocery stores and looked at the things because I wanted to know what was going on in the community, right? And so one of the things that has to happen is the way you change your mindset on marketing is you recognize, most of us recognize the opportunity inside the school, right? So we see the opportunity for Mrs. Jones to help us with the PTA, and for Bill Jones is a Boy Scout leader, and this guy is running the Flag Football League, and this guy is the president of the Kiwanis. If you ask those questions, most of us are tuned in enough to recognize those opportunities. Is that a fair statement? And if you get out of the habit of asking, if you don't know what each and every person does, what associations, organizations they belong to, you're missing a big boat. But what most of us don't do is transition that next to walk out the front door of the school and look at how it looks from the street and see if the signage is right and it's inviting enough and it's going to encourage walk-ins. And then walk to the business next door and see if their clientele might be a good fit for you. Walk down the sidewalk and see what's happening there. Walk around the corner. One of the first things that we did when I was in D.C. is I took everybody and we walked down the sidewalk and walked around the block. And guess what? Around the block, there was at least 10,000 people a day in different businesses coming through that all should have been our students, right? And some of the staff thought, well, the people on the street that are here in this area aren't our good prospects. So we walked down the street, and I started going, yes, 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 no, no way, yes, maybe, yes, maybe, yes, no. I mean, how loud? I mean, there's five of us. They must have thought we were crazy going, yes, yes, no, yes, no, maybe, yes, no, right? And Alan made a comment to me. He said, well, just look at the bus stand. Everybody getting off the bus, they're not our market. So I did. I stood in Starbucks and watched the bus stand. And guess what happened? Everybody who was paying $3.97 for a latte was perfect for their market. And everybody who was getting on the bus were the people who were cleaning the Johns and the restaurants for the people who could afford it. And in fact, when I was sitting in the Starbucks, there was a 911 Carrera 4 parked immediately across the street. There was a BMW 5 Series. There was a BMW 7 Series. There was plenty of market, right? But what we've all got to get in the habit of is seeing opportunity. Does that make sense? One of the things that, for many years, I always did with our staff. That's why you have all these things stacked up. So you'll be happy to know that you have a lunch assignment. Pass those out. I'll put out of work. Pass those out. Who else wants to volunteer? Crystal, I'll put you to work. Okay. So, there you go. Make sure everybody has one of those.
Just those.
And the next one. That one. So you're put to work, Jonathan. Carol, we'll put you to work. I'll give it back. Okay, while we're handing them out, we don't need to worry about these. While we're handing them out, here are these two publications, which I had to, you should appreciate, I had to go to 9 different grocery stores to nearly enough to go around. They looked at me kind of funny as I walked in and grabbed, 15. But, this is a local, it's obvious what it is, local parent magazine. Most of you have something like this in your area. This is the local alternative newspaper or magazine. Don't hold us accountable for the fact that we're now the pot capital of the United States. But you will notice, by the way, back here, equally along with the sex talk lines is every marijuana shop in the state, because that's now legal. They're actually talking about making it illegal to advertise. But what I want you to do is go through these as a small group with a highlight. Here's your mission. Every event that's going on. Now, forget about geography. assume that if they're in either one of these, that they would be within, you know, 3, 5, 8 miles of your school. Okay, don't worry about that. But go through both of them and find every event that might be useful if you had a presence in. Find every other advertiser that also sells to your target market. Okay? I also have some of the... this isn't a bad one for the kind of more airy-fairy market. I don't think I have enough to go around. So, you know, the Tai Chi guys and stuff, you might go through this one as well. But the thing you find a lot of times is you just don't know what else is going on out there, right? And there might be an event that is going to attract 10,000 30 to 45-year-old fit women. Don, tell us about the Red Rocks thing every...
They do a fitness event there every weekend. It has several hundred people at one time working out. But they do a mega event. They were having, I think it was about 2,000 doing yoga at 8. My wife did that. And then there was a boot camp at like 10. Well, actually, both, they probably had about 5,000 or 6,000 people working out there throughout the day, you know. And it's, and I have to admit that there was very strong marketing by every fitness company in the greater Denver area there to market to that. But
yeah. But what Red Rocks is a natural rock amphitheater. I mean, the Beatles played here years ago. I mean, if you've seen the U2 Blood Red Sky video from way back, it was shot here, and a lot of other more recent ones. But it's one of the most spectacular live amphitheaters in the country. It's only about 2 miles from here. And when there's nothing going on, you can go tour it. So on the weekend, you might go. It's a nice place to visit. It's just on the other side of I-70 from here. But what... Yeah, well, let's skip that, Jeff. We should not have let you look at the alternative paper. But what... 65 going on 14. Jeff, how old are you this year?
40.
But I celebrated my 25th anniversary.
Isn't this the 20-something
of being 40?
Well, this type of format, several people in the room and a few that aren't here have had good luck with this. When we did cardio kickboxing, I used to buy a full-page ad in here every issue. For cardio kickboxing, for Tai Chi, you had said you'd had luck with this, right?
And natural awakenings also.
Yeah. So this is not a kids market magazine, but it is a fairly decent young adult, 30 to 40-something adult. I mean, I read it all the time because they go to a lot of concerts, so I go through the concert listing. This obviously is targeted at parents. Now, what I'm not asking you to do is look at these from a standpoint of buying an ad in them. But what I want you to do is go through with a highlighter and say, who is buying an ad in here that I should be working with? Who is buying an ad in here that if I had a great relationship and they were feeding all of their students, all of their customers to me because they loved what we were doing, would that benefit me? What live events are going on that would benefit me? What private schools are in here that I should be working with? So go through it with a highlighter. Figure out what other companies would be in here. If this were your city, what other companies you should be working with, what live events you should be at, and be looking at it from a standpoint of opportunity. Again, like this one, for years, I had once a month, all the staff, we'd have highlighters, we'd go through it. And we would find all kinds of interesting stuff that we should be doing and people we should know and companies that we should be working with. The other thing, from a standpoint of seeing opportunity, is you've just got to mentally get in the idea of walk outside your school and make ever greater concentric circles around your school to figure out what other opportunities you are. I was really annoying now when I was in D.C. because I said, how many people work in that building? What's the major employer over here? Is that a residential building? How much are those condos? And I've got my Zillow app, my Trulia app, and my LoopNet app. So we're walking down the street. I'm going, well, let's see. Retail's going for $122 a square foot there. Those condos are $875,000. But if you're not that aware of your market, you don't know where your opportunities are. Some of the biggest hits I did in 1983 were the apartment managers in big apartment complexes. Again, this is for 32-year-old adults. Would let me do anything I wanted, as long as I didn't slide it under the door and staple it to their door, because that's how I built some of the relationships. They got pissed off at me first. But they would put flyers in their newsletters, and they would hold a community event, and I would give them a 10% discount for Westwood residents, and we would do high-rise residential and stuff like that. But if you don't know what's in your immediate area, it doesn't happen. And so it has to be do the immediate walking tour, get in the car and do the tour, and you should know what every big church is doing every month, what every big community center is doing every month. You should know what every elementary, middle school, high school is doing every month. You should know what the colleges have going on. So, again, depending upon what your target market is, you know, in the kids market, we wanted to have a great relationship with 20 elementary schools. And I was walking in and bringing donuts to the gal at the front desk and picking up the newsletters and talking to the PTA principals, all that stuff every month, right? But so your lunch assignment is to go through with a highlighter and find every opportunity that there is, events, companies, organizations. And we're back in here in an hour and 15 minutes, so at 1:30. And again, there's here, and there's a whole bunch of options up and down the street, ranging next to Starbucks, the all-you-can-eat pizza place, the sandwich shop, and everything else. What, Toby?
Don't go eat with
what? Yeah, make sure you've met somebody else who's doing something completely different than you are and pick their brain.
Can I
grab that? Yeah. No, of course. I think I stole this one from him. Now.
Gotta get some work done.
Toby, where do you want this mic?
Two things you remember: sandwich, no pepper, it was challenging. Every step of the way.